Hello and welcome to a special edition of Progressive News Network. I'm your host, Brooke Hines. It is election night, Tuesday, November 3, 2020. And holy cow, things are happening. You know, Progressive News Network is headquartered in Florida. And it looks like right now Florida is, they haven't called it yet, but it looks like Florida is going to go to Trump. So there's some stuff to talk about there. Some very interesting things going on in South Florida with regard to campaigning, strategy, messaging, and how that has impacted the election. And then we're going to have a special guest, Victor Tiffany, join us at the top of the hour, 10 o'clock. And if you remember, Victor Tiffany wrote the book Bernie or Bust. So we're going to have a chat about how some of the values with the Bernie Sanders movement might be impacting what we're seeing tonight. All right, let's start. Let's start right here. So I've been following, real quickly, I've been following the returns on Reuters, which has a really good interface. So, you know, if you're casting about and looking for a good way to follow the returns tonight, and hopefully not going into tomorrow, but for the duration, Reuters seems to have the best returns, the most responsive. They're updating every 30 seconds. Now, Florida, great. I've had some trouble with Blog Talk Radio's tech and the interface in the last couple of weeks, and I was a little bit worried that that the live feed wasn't going to go out tonight, and a listener just texted me to let me know that it is going out. So I'm very glad to hear that. Thank you so much. Yeah, so in Florida, what the hell is going on in Florida, and why do we have to keep saying what the hell is going on in Florida? You know, we got a problem here. We got a problem with the party. I mean, we just need to be real about this. It's when you look at what wins in the state and you look at what loses in the state, you can't, and you know, if you have a little bit of an idea of what's going on behind the scenes, you can't help but place some of the blame for what's going on right now with the statewide party, especially with regards to what is happening in South Florida. So let's just jump right in. We've got down in South Florida, we've got 90% of the votes counted, and 94 and 92. I'm looking at districts 26 and 27. District 27, these are congressional districts. Donna Shalala in District 27, it looks like she's going to lose that seat. And it also looks like in District 26 that Debbie McCarthy Powell is also going to lose a seat. These are two Democrats in South Florida. And I don't see how they can make up the loss here. So the Republican in District 26 has 51.8% of the vote, and the Democrat Powell has 48.2%. And then in District 27, the former Health and Human Services Donna Shalala has only 48.6% of the vote, and her challenger has 51.4%. So these are two Republicans being brought in to Congress from South Florida because of Trump. Now, what is going on in South Florida? Why is it underperforming so bad? You might have caught in the last few weeks that there's been a lot of talk about the Latino vote. You know, what is, how do we message to Latino voters? How do we turn out the vote? How do we mobilize these communities and yada, yada, yada? Well, there was a lot of talk about it, but it doesn't seem like, from what I'm hearing from people on the ground, it doesn't seem like there was much to do about it. So they like to talk about it, and they like to talk about how important it is to turn out the Latino vote. And then when it comes to actually turning out the Latino vote and mobilizing those voters, they don't have, they don't seem to have the interest to actually do it. All right. What they, the strategy that they took in South Florida was basically an anti-communist strategy. They went about doing all of this messaging with regard to Venezuela and Maduro down in South Florida. So what they were trying to do was to appeal to the white Cuban population in Miami and, you know, try to get them to turn out for the Democrats. But what they do with that messaging is they turn off the Democrats who, the base who would already, you know, want to come and vote. They feel pushed out of the space, you know? I mean, because number one, this is the election for president of the United States, and we're interested in the issues that are happening in this country, right? We're not trying with this election to overturn an election in Venezuela, and also the timing was really bad vis-a-vis what's going on in Bolivia. You know, so the United States went down and meddled in Bolivia, and there was a coup, and they kicked out Evo Morales, who was a great left-wing leader down there, and they tried to smear him like he was some kind of dictator or something, which is just absolutely absurd. And then about a week ago, the elections in Bolivia overturned that whole coup situation. So they voted out the fascists in Bolivia. And then here in South Florida, they appealed to that same kind of weird, you know, fascist coup mentality to try and elevate Joe Biden to the audience, to the voting audience in South Florida. And it just didn't work. The numbers from 2016 to 2020 are pretty bad for Miami-Dade. The Broward County, just to the north, actually, those numbers look really good. And those numbers, the amount of turnout is fairly decent. Joe Biden is taking that county by 64.6%. Donald Trump only won 34.8%. Down in Miami, that has tightened. It's tightened up a little bit in terms of percentages, but in terms of vote total, there are fewer voters than should have turned out. And that's where the problem lies. That's where the problem is in South Florida, is in Miami. Now, hopefully we'll have some South Florida experts in to talk about this on Sunday. I'm going to work on that. But I think that the broad strokes here are that the party ran a very lazy campaign in Miami and kind of sat back on their laurels down there. And it's come back to bite them. Now, as you move up through the state, looking at the amendments, we had a lot of ballot initiatives this time. The increase in minimum wage to $15 an hour, that passed. And another ballot initiative that was bad went down. So there was this other ballot initiative that was essentially trying to stop ballot initiatives. It was backed by Alec and Koch Brothers money. And so they lost on that one. We won the minimum wage one, which tells me that statewide, the state is very interested in progressive policy that improves the material conditions of voters. Voters are very interested in their material conditions. A couple of other ballot initiatives statewide this year had to do with homestead exemption and property taxes and stuff. And both of those passed, even though they're basically nothing. These kind of things where should the widows of veterans get a break on property taxes or homestead or whatever. That's material conditions. Yeah, that is, you know, people see that as money in the pocket of people who are deserving, even, you know, people will vote for these initiatives for the widows of veterans and all this sort of stuff. Those pop up on the ballot in Florida all the time. And, you know, so there you go. Material conditions are winning conditions in Florida. And I had somebody on Twitter say to me, well, you know, what that shows you is that Republicans will vote in their self-interest. So the only difference between the parties then, therefore, is racism. You know, and I kind of thought about that and I'm like, okay, but what are you going to do about it? You know? I mean, are you just going to keep yelling you're racist at everybody, or are you going to try and give them something aspirational that they actually want to vote for? I think that it's a better strategy to give people something aspirational that they want to vote for, like $15 minimum wage, you know, something like that, that is a absolute positive. Yes, I want that. That makes a lot more sense to me. Another race that I think is really interesting, moving away from the ballot initiatives, there is a progressive state attorney in Orlando and Orange County and Osceola who won. And this is one of just two progressive, state attorneys races that have been called so far in this cycle. So we've got this one in Orlando, and then there was another progressive state attorney in Austin, Texas, who has also won their race. So that's some very good news. And, you know, people tend not to pay enough attention to these state attorneys races, but they really matter. They're, it's definitely where the rubber meets the road kind of stuff. Yeah, these are the people who can actually end mass incarceration. You know, we've got to do it piecemeal now, state attorney by state attorney. All right, let's take a little break and come back and look at some more returns as they're coming in. Okay, and we're back. I had just tangled myself up in a wire. That was fun. Okay, so something that is really chopping my ass tonight is Florida's gone red, and it looks like North Carolina is going to go blue. How about that? We've got 80% of the votes counted, and Joe Biden has 50.3%, and Donald Trump has 48.6%. So we've got North Carolina going blue, and it also looks like Ohio is going to go blue. So there's 64% of the vote in Ohio, and it's a much smaller spread between the two candidates. It's just at this point, 0.3%. So that could flip. That could definitely flip between now and the rest of those returns coming in. But for the moment, Joe Biden is winning Ohio, and it also looks like early returns have Joe Biden doing well in Minnesota. And this is only 19% of the vote has been counted, but so far, CNN was saying, and it looks like according to Reuters, that there is a good lead for Biden. All right. Another interesting dynamic is happening in Georgia right now. Donald Trump is convincingly winning Georgia. However, there are still some blue counties and some blue votes outstanding. And there's a Senate race there that might not be decided tonight. That's the special election race with Kelly Loeffler in it. And it looks like 10 or 15 other candidates. Very, very odd race there in Georgia. What else? South Carolina. The last time I looked at South Carolina, we've got 38% of the vote in. They've called it for Donald Trump, which is interesting, which is 38% of the vote in. But if you look at the map county by county, there's a lot of blue in South Carolina. And remember, South Carolina was where Joe Biden supposedly locked up and won the primary. So, you know, you kind of would have expected, you know, given the way that, you know, there was all of this fanfare about Biden in South Carolina, you would kind of expect that he would perform better in the state in the general. I mean, you would maybe expect that. I didn't expect it. No one ever wins South Carolina into the general, out of the primaries, but that's the way that that Jim Clyburn and Joe Biden presented it. Let's look real close at South Carolina at the Senate race. Lindsey Graham is leading 54.3% to Jamie Harrison's 44.4%. So chances are Lindsey Graham is going to keep that seat in South Carolina. And it looks like we've got Victor Tiffany on. Hold on, bring him in. Hey, Victor, are you there?
I am. How you doing, Brooke?
I am well. So you got any thoughts on tonight's returns?
Well, I think it's going to take a while. Of course, that's what the people on television keep telling us, isn't it? But
they
ask. One thing to keep in mind is they talk about the blue wall that Biden was hoping to build back with Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. Trump, if everything else is equal, if the Democrats don't take Ohio or Arizona, if everything else is equal to 2016, Trump only needs one of those three to hold on to the White House.
Mm-hmm.
And he's winning pretty good right now in Michigan. We'll see how that plays out. But I have a suspicion that he's going to try to steal this thing. If it's close enough, if it's not a blowout and obvious by the end of the night,
mm-hmm.
then he's going to try to take this through the courts and replicate what George Bush did in 2000.
Yeah, and there's so he's got three people on the Supreme Court who were involved in Bush v. Gore, and there's been a lot of talk about the 12th Amendment, you know, using the ability to stop the vote count. Greg Palast has been out talking about that and really just banging the drum about it. I was actually expecting Biden to be performing a little bit better. I never had Florida down in his column. I also didn't have North Carolina down in his column, but it looks like North Carolina is going to go to Biden. So things are a lot closer than I was expecting them to be. And, you know, we're old enough to remember 2000 and 2004. And all it takes is one state for there to be a contention in one state and focus on that one state.
Right.
That state could be Ohio, or it could be Michigan, any of those blue wall states, Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota. Pennsylvania is the returns are coming in super slow. They've been prepping us for a slow, not seeing the votes tonight on Pennsylvania. I don't understand why that would be the case, but
they didn't start counting all the early votes and the write-in votes until this morning.
Okay.
Millions of votes have to be counted by, I don't know if they're using a machine or how they're doing it, but that's, you know, if it's the right mail-in votes, I don't know how easily that they can be fed through the machine in Pennsylvania, but it's going to take a while. It's going to take probably two, three days.
So far, they've got 19% of the vote counted in Pennsylvania, and it looks like about a total of, let me see, we got 646,000 votes for Joe Biden, 629,000 votes for Donald Trump, 50% to 48% with just 19% counted. There's a lot of blue areas in Pennsylvania. There's Erie, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Philadelphia, Harrisburg area. Scranton right now on the map is red, which is kind of odd because Biden's been branding himself as the Scranton Democrat.
Yeah, well, he has a number of mythologies he tries to create about himself. You know, he was there, but it's been a long time, and the city doesn't remain his just because he lived there for a little while.
That's right. Did you, going into tonight, did you have a feel for were you expecting a anything one way or the other, a landslide for Trump or a landslide for Biden?
Yeah, no, I pretty much have expressed it. I thought and still believe it's going to be pretty close. And the president's going to use that to try to drive this through the courts as
mm-hmm.
much as, you know, whenever he can, whatever issue he can use to push this into the court system and then start, you know, appealing that to higher courts. And the idea is to get this before the Supreme Court. And that's how he keeps the presidency.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's a blowout, if Biden wins, say, Ohio and Arizona and Pennsylvania, then that's just not going to happen. But I don't think Pennsylvania is going to be called. And I think that's where Trump's going to take a stand, his legal stand, to challenge those late counted ballots. We'll see. I hope I'm wrong. I mean, I say I hope I'm wrong. I'm not convinced, you know, Biden's preferable to Trump. He certainly behaves. He's more like what we're used to, but he's pretty right-wing Democrat. I think he's going to cause problems down the road. And the biggest issue I had with Biden all along was his support for the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which would fundamentally transform this country from what the framers developed in terms of some sort of democratic republic into a corporate order, legal order, corporate design, legal order. And so if Biden does pull this out, we have a big fight. Progressives in particular have a big fight to stop that thing before it gets through Congress. It's only going to take a great majority vote.
Mm-hmm. You get a competent neoliberal, or at least somebody who would have a competent staff in Biden, versus an incompetent nincompoop who, God only knows what you know Trump is, you know what his platform is, or you know I don't think that he has any kind of strategy or idea of what he wants to do. I think that things are being run by Ivanka and Jared, and they're just basically trying to keep their heads above water.
Right. Yeah, no, it's a disaster either way. I'm not particularly thrilled, but no matter who wins tonight. This isn't going to be a progressive celebration. It's a horrible situation that we're in. We got the candidate that the liberals want to see win is actually historically more prone to start new wars than the boob that's in the White House.
Mm-hmm.
So again, it goes back to, you know, there's nothing to celebrate, at least from a progressive perspective.
Right. And, you know, I was talking about the ballot initiatives in Florida, and we passed the $15 minimum wage. And the Democratic Party can lose the state and the state go to Trump, but a statewide ballot initiative, you know, that has to get 60% of the vote to pass, passes for $15 minimum wage. And, you know, it just seems to me that there's some soul searching that needs to be done within the party. I mean, I think obviously that what happened with Biden was, Obama stepped in and said, this is who we want. And everyone else stepped aside, and it was Biden and Bernie. And, that was enough to throw it to Biden, because the messaging then became, well, you got to go with the sure thing. And I know there were plenty of Bernie people who were like, well, I don't think Biden's far from a sure thing. You know, I mean, what are you even basing that on? He has trouble forming a sentence.
Right. A lot of this was constructed by the media. You know, the Biden's a better, more likely candidate because he's centrist and, former vice president and all that. And it's a narrative that was largely created by the establishment, people around Obama and their allies in the media, CNN and so forth. Previously, when Biden ran, his flaws were really highlighted by the media. I mean, they helped bury him, talking about his lies, talking about his plagiarism, talking about, you know, his fabulism. He's just, he makes things up. And they called him out on it. And of course, he had to drop out because he wasn't doing well enough. And this time they're just silent. I mean, you reference his cognitive decline. You got people like Brian Stelter on his program, Reliable Sources, poo-pooing that idea that there's any problems with Biden. He just makes a couple of mistakes. That was his rationale. It's pretty pathetic, the extent to which the media is framing this election, framing the candidates. They lie about Trump quite often. There's a lot of people who believe Trump suggested we inject or drink bleach or formaldehyde, but sanitizer of some sort. And he never ever suggested. It was a stupid question that he asked, but that stupid question was turned by the media into, oh, he thinks we should drink bleach or whatever the hell the way they framed it. And that's just one example. I could go after, I could cite several examples of the way they distort Trump. They obviously don't like him, but they don't talk about how Biden is to Trump's right on trade and on war and peace, and in other ways. Of course, a lot of people are scared about SCOTUS picks, and for good reason. We have a pretty reactionary court now.
Right.
But
right.
I'm not sure what we're going to get from Trump. I mean, everyone thinks, you know, from Joe Biden. Everyone thinks this devout Catholic is going to nominate someone who's going to protect Roe versus Wade. I don't see that as a sure thing at all.
Well, I think that Roe versus Wade was lost a long time ago, way back when in the Clinton administration, they put the issue back to the states. As soon as it went back to the states, that effectively meant that whether or not you had access to reproductive health services was at the whim of whether you had a Republican or a Democratic state government, and then that could change. So that's not any kind of justice. That isn't any kind of, you know, security.
Right. Yeah, I don't think there is security. I don't think there is hope, if you will. I don't think there's any, no matter what happens after tonight, I don't think there's any sort of room for optimism.
Right. Well, you know,
the only thing I can come up with is Joe Biden, you know, they use his 25th Amendment to get him out of office because he just can't complete a sentence. His mind continues to progressively go downhill. And Harris has made the president, and somehow she's actually as progressive or liberal as the Republicans are claiming she is. That would be great. I mean, I don't think she is. I don't think she's that progressive at all. I think she's pretty centrist neoliberal.
Yeah, and a prosecutor. Yeah. So I mean, you've got the worst of both worlds there, and a fiscally conservative and also socially conservative with regard to a prison pipeline and that type of thing.
Right.
Yeah, people think that the way she's painted in the right leaning press is like she's some kind of communist insurgent or something.
To the left of Bernie Sanders.
Right. Absolutely ridiculous.
Yep.
So
but it's not working, I don't think. I don't think the American people are buying it. I don't think the American people put that much weight into who the vice president is.
No, the only people who care are the, I always call them DNC intern accounts, the whole K-Hive phenomena on social media is, I mean, if you started looking at this about the time that I did at the beginning of the primaries, and you saw the way that all of these accounts started coming together and growing and forming, they were forming around people who were obviously and openly staffers, congressional staffers, like not even campaign staffers, but people who were working on Capitol Hill. And so, you know, it kind of branched out from there, and the groups got bigger and bigger, and they kept this sensibility of, you know, this is what we do for work. You know, it's not like they're real people with real issues or anything. They're professionals and transactionalists.
Right. Staff.
Mm-hmm.
Hired help.
Yeah. And, you know, the whole phenomena around Kamala Harris, too, has that whole vibe of where you have to kind of genuflect. Like, there's so much genuflecting to Kamala, and that the whole thing about Kay Hive is that she's a queen, like a queen bee or whatever. And, you know, it's just, it's to me, it's antithetical to the way that a Democratic persona should be created. It just all, you know, just from the word go is this kind of royalist, you know, like, you know, yes, my queen, you know.
It's strange. My sense that he picked her, even though she's from California, California's going to be blue no matter who the pick was.
Mm-hmm.
He picked her for her financial connections, her large donor base. I guess she's been developing that quite extensively for a while.
God, they're just such obvious money chasers. You know, they're not even, and that's the problem. They're not even chasing votes. They're just chasing money. If they were chasing votes, they would have in 2016 or in 2020, they would have put Bernie on the ballot. You know, they would have, you know, made a coalition of the two, you know, establishment and the insurgent. And, you know, that would have been a winning ticket. Easy peasy.
Yeah, even Trump was worried about that possibility.
Oh, yeah. Well, he was worried about running against Bernie, period.
Right.
That was his whole thing, that he couldn't win against Bernie. He knows how to run and win against someone like Joe Biden. And as we've been talking, the odds on Betfair have flipped from 37% to a 75% chance that Trump will win the election. Now, you had mentioned earlier, this is the betting on the, you know, who's going to win. So Betfair is a place where you can, you know, gamble money on sports and stuff like that. I forgot what I was going to say. been chasing this idea all night long about how progressives go about winning elections versus how the establishment goes about winning elections. And, you know, progressives go about it with this idea of, you know, it's about the people, it's about the votes, it's about the mobilization, you know, all of those things. And what the establishment goes after is, you know, what do the donors want? How many people with a lot of money can we get involved? And something that I saw happening in Florida pretty early on in the general election was, and this is new, donors were in on all of the operational calls, you know, how there's staff calls and volunteer calls and all of that type of stuff in a campaign. Well, generally, you don't have the donors getting in on these calls and pushing people around, you know, donors are best when, you know, they write you the check and then you let professionals kind of do their job, and professionals have the authority to say, here's the boundary, you know, you don't know what you're doing. So, you know, thank you for the check very much, but now we've got to go do our job and win this race. And
right.
Where I was getting the reports of this, the where people were really alarmed about it was in Miami, was in South Florida. And that's exactly where we see the underperforming. The votes could have, and, you know, I've had people flagging this for me for quite a while now, that the vote by mail ballots weren't coming in and the early vote tallies weren't where they should have been. And, you know, I think that a lot of that has to do with this allowing the donors to kind of play, giving them the same authority to make decisions and to push staff around as professionals who actually know what they're doing.
You don't think the that has a lot to do with what the post office is doing to sort of monkey up the gears?
How so?
Well, I'm not sure how they're slowing down the delivery of the mail, but it's pretty clear mail has gotten much slower in the last couple of months. And supposedly that was intentional to try to have some of these ballots arrive late.
Right. Okay.
So they don't get counted.
Right. Well, yeah, in Florida. So, with ballot chase, people know who has requested vote by mail ballots. So they know how many ballots are out versus how many have come in. So that's how they check the numbers. So we haven't had, that's not where the problem lies with the vote by mail. The problem with vote by mail in Miami is that nobody was, or there were fewer people who were motivated to vote. There were just fewer people who were like, I don't care. which is interesting because I've been saying.
That can't be too surprising with these candidates.
Yeah,
I'm not particularly motivated to vote for either of them either, and didn't.
Well, I think that I've been noticing a lot of interest from infrequent voters and first-time voters. Like, people who are in their 40s and their 50s who've never voted before, getting very interested and wanting to vote. And I think a lot of that has been pushed by this media narrative. Like what you were saying, that the media has done a really good job of manufacturing this consent around Joe Biden and also manufacturing this chaos around Donald Trump. Now, let just being real, Donald Trump is perfectly capable of creating plenty of chaos himself, but the media has taken every opportunity to heighten the amount of chaos around him. Like, for instance, all day today, media has been banging the drum about, oh, there's going to be civil unrest, and I read a story on Sunday about people stocking up for the coming civil war. I mean, the media has just gone completely apeshit. And, I wish people would ask Chomsky about this before he, kicks the bucket. God bless him. He's still doing every single interview that people ask him to do. And it doesn't seem like people are asking him the right questions. But right now, more than ever, we need some strong voices about reeling in the media. I think the media is just out of control at this point.
Yeah, they are. I'm not sure I would use that phrase. I mean, there's a control there, but it's control of a certain, I'm going to use the word establishment because I don't want to go to deep state or anything like that. But there's certainly, it's more than bias. I mean, the conservatives have known this for a long time about CNN and called it the Clinton News Network and so forth. It's been pretty obvious for years. And in this contest, it's really obvious. They didn't hold Biden under any kind of close scrutiny at all. He was able to get away with lies, tons of incomplete sentences because he just isn't got his shit together enough to complete a sentence.
Mm-hmm.
I could go on. But you're absolutely right. This whole thing has been framed by the media. We need and it's widespread. It's not just CNN, the Washington Post, the New York Times. They're all bad enough. Matt Taibbi has covered the scandal of how the media responded, including social media, responded to the Hunter Biden emails that came out.
Oh, yeah.
It's really shocking. It's really a shift in standards, journalism standards, from let's find out if there's any truth to these things, to we can't let anything out at this point that might trip up Joe Biden. It's just protecting a candidate, which is it's new. It's not happened before, at least the way Taibbi describes it. It's really sort of unprecedented consensus that Donald Trump has got to go. So no matter what the hell's wrong with our candidate, we can't talk about it, because Trump's got to go. We got to paint him in the best possible light, not Trump, but whoever the candidate is, of course, is Biden. But it's a horrible situation. We are so far beyond the media world that I grew up in. It's pathetic. It's just terrible what's happened to the media in this country, partly because I think the internet has changed things so much, and partly because they've just become partisan propaganda, almost right. All of them. You really have to go dig deep for something that isn't. And I would include Chomsky in that. He's pretty clearly partisan in his analysis and his recommendations. You have to go to someone like Matt Taibbi and Chris Hedges. And, of course, we talked previously about Alan Howell, Dr. Howell, and Howell Underground. And there aren't very many others who are outside that blue-red partisan framework. John Stone, of course, isn't caught up in it. She disdains both parties pretty equally.
Caitlin. And it amazes me how much heat Taibbi withstands for just the most mundane assertions, which are we should cover the news fairly, just to cover the facts. Why don't we do that?
They don't want to do that because it might be something. Supposedly, it's a lesson from 2016, and not covering whatever comes out in WikiLeaks about the candidate they want to win. I'm sure if some dirt came out about Trump, they'd be very happy to talk about it and discuss it until everyone's blue in the face. But if it's Biden, they're just protecting him. They lie about his cognitive decline. They hid the Hunter Biden email story. I don't know if there was anything there. I think the bigger scandal is the extent to which media, New York Times, Washington Post, Twitter, of course, Facebook, how much they were almost coordinated. It almost sounds like a conspiracy. And I'm not claiming there was a conspiracy. I think it's more of a consensus. This time around, we're not going to let news information that comes out sink our candidate, sink the candidate who's running against Trump. So last time, here's another example. CNN had the Green Party candidates, Jill Stein and what was his name? I can't remember now. Anyway, they were both on to discuss the race and their candidacy. I don't think CNN did that this time. They didn't have Howie Hawkins on to discuss his candidacy. It was completely marginalized, and they did that on purpose because they didn't want a repeat of 2016. They don't want people voting green, which has been my biggest promotional activity over the last month, is trying to discourage votes for either one of two horrible candidates, and vote your conscience, vote for somebody you actually want to win in the White House, vote green. But of course, my reach is pretty small. My footprint's pretty small compared to getting on CNN.
Sure, sure. Well, and, you know, I just want to kind of add to that and kind of expand this idea, because what's actually going on in these media outlets is that they're relying on PR people to provide them the news. Newsrooms all over the country have been wiped out because of economics or whatever. What I would, you know, it's profit taking, basically. They're wiping out jobs, and a good job at a newspaper used to pay a decent wage, and you had your beat and you wrote your stories and you went home. And now you're expected to, first of all, wages are pretty much what you would expect to make, like, in retail, you know, if you got a little bit of a commission, like selling cars, like that kind of thing. So wages are shit, and you're expected to write your beat, somebody else's beat, do your social media, and do video production on all of your stories too. So you're essentially doing four jobs that 20 years ago when I was getting out of school, or 30 years ago when I was getting out of school, it was one job, and it was just writing the news. So there's fewer people out there doing it. And the way that the labor breaks down now is that people who are producing the news are relying more and more on public relations people. So public relations people are just sort of handing them stories. And you can see this if you read between the lines on MSNBC especially. You can see that pretty much everything Joyanne Reed talks about is taken straight from her notes from the last person who called her office, you know, the last congressional staffer who called her. And, you know, she took their call, and, you know, she was like, oh, and you want you and I should mention who and who else should I have on? Got any other suggestions? You know, and, you know, what should I ask them? You know, that's the way it comes together now. It's all being driven by the special interests, you know, that we never get to see, you know. So nobody's really producing news. Nobody's doing investigations. Nobody's holding anyone to account. I saw someone tweet today about adversarial national security reporting, and how one of the last few adversarial national security reporters that we had was Michael Hastings, who died in a fiery car crash that was quite questionable, you know, while he was working on a story about John Brennan, after he had basically ruined what's his name's career, Petraeus and McChrystal.
Right.
So, you know, so there's the dangers of being a decent reporter. And then you have the, you know, bringing this back to Matt Taibbi and like Glenn Greenwald, you've got people who, you know, once you're a staff writer with a brand, either at The Intercept, you know, Glenn Greenwald founded The Intercept, and he just left because The Intercept, you know, was trying to censor him. Matt Taibbi left his regular gig at the Rolling Stone for, you know, reasons that weren't as well publicized as Glenn Greenwald's. But reading between the lines, you can pretty much grok that what was going on there was, you know, he wasn't being able to do his job.
He didn't spell that out, did he? I've actually subscribed now to his Substack, and I don't see where he's talked about that. When when did that happen? I didn't realize he left.
I think he still will do something every now and then, and he still does a Useful Idiots podcast. But he's not in the same position that he was before. So I think it was kind of like a stepping aside kind of thing. Let me see if I can find an article on it while we're talking about it.
Now, one thing I want to work on in the aftermath of this election is media. basically continuing the conversation we've been having for the last 15 minutes or so, and try to get people to understand that you're not watching the news. Well, you're watching CNN or MSNBC or Fox or PBS or CBS or ABC. You're not watching news. You're watching partisan propaganda. It's really become clear the extent to which there is no news. There is no fourth estate anymore. And it's kind of sad. I'm trying to think who would have been a decent reporter on the right. Of course, Chef Smith stepped down quite a long time ago. But he was a little more willing to believe national security people, the same people who lied us into Iraq and other conflicts. He's willing to believe them when they said that the Russians interfered with 2016.
Yeah, so you have places where anchors will accept the received narrative, and you have areas where anchors will push back on the received narrative. And so if the received narrative is from national security is saying, there's weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, or the Russians are running the United States through the White House because Trump is a agent of the Russian Empire or whatever. If anchors are much less likely to push back on national security reporting than they are to push back, say, on political reporting, which is these are fine lines right here because they don't do much of that either. Or let's say like financial reporting.
No, you're right. I agree with that. I think I can't. I don't want to generalize and guess as to why that's the case, but it's concerning because our foreign policy. John Stone points this out recently in some of her articles. Our foreign policy affects way more people around the world than our domestic policy. So when you, for example, get someone like Biden in the White House, it's going to adversely affect far more people worldwide than Trump being reelected or stealing the election is going to. I mean, obviously that's going to adversely affect people in the United States, but not people around the world the way, to the extent that Biden would. What's her name? She did a great Abby Martin did a great comparison of foreign policy between Trump and Biden. She, basically it's a massive trade-off. What they're both horrible, they're both absolutely horrible. But one might be worse toward Venezuela, and the other one might be worse toward Iran, which obviously is the case with Biden and Trump. It's so crazy that the extent to which progressives have been marginalized from the executive branch. When's the last time we had a progressive in the executive branch?
Robert Reich, but he wasn't progressive at the time. He became progressive after.
Right. No, I mean as president.
Oh, as president? Shit. maybe FDR. I'm of the mind that I don't think that JFK was that progressive. I think that he was pretty neoliberal. So I would have to go back to FDR at least.
What about LBJ?
Oh, well, LBJ,
he did a lot of cat.
Like he was rough and tumble, sharp elbowed, lawmaker from Texas, and he knew how to make a deal, and he was obscene in a lot of ways, but he knew how to. He was still one of those old style New Dealers, and you
right.
know, like
exactly.
part of
the
what was
society was his.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the Voting Rights Act he signed, and the Civil Rights Act he signed.
Mm-hmm. Which is a great irony, because his big downfall if people from 2020 looking back at LBJ, what they're going to say is, wow, that guy was racist. But wow, that guy passed the Voting Rights Act and the Civil Rights Act and the Great Society. So, I mean, you know, I don't know. I think people got to get real about, holy shit. People got to get real about identity politics. The holy shit there is that this is what I was predicting earlier in the night, is that there are a couple of congressional seats in Miami that are going to flip to the Republicans. I think that, so it was just now called that Representative Debbie Mercosso Powell, and I always mispronounce her name, Mucarcel Powell, and that's in the 26th congressional district in Miami. The Democrat lost her seat to the Republican. And what's going to be announced here in just a while, I'm pretty sure, is that Donna Shalala is going to lose her seat as well. So that's two Miami congressional seats lost to incumbents.
That's interesting. The Republicans are leading currently, 104 to 81 seats in the House.
Oh, fuck. We could lose the House. So Shalala.
It's pretty early.
Shalala's going to lose, too. She's behind by 10,000 votes. And it's 92% of the returns.
She's toast.
She's toast.
Yeah, with that gap at 90%. Yeah, I don't have individual seats. I'm looking at a sort of a summary page on Political.
Reuters has a really good state-by-state live update that is, you know, you got to go state-by-state, but it let me get down into the down to brass tacks with Florida's congressional seats. Now, what you don't see on these kinds of trackers are ballot initiatives. And I remember back in 2016 when Hillary lost, there was a slew of very progressive ballot initiatives nationwide that passed. So at the same time, they were electing Trump and rejecting Hillary Clinton. Or Hillary Jesus, they were all over the country. They were raising the minimum wage and changing the way that primaries run. And here's another good progressive in Florida. Just won a state Senate seat. Linda Stewart wins state Senate District 13. That's good. And state's attorneys. So I touched on state's attorneys just a little bit earlier. It's very important, and people don't pay enough attention to state's attorneys. But so a lot of that is changing. Glenn Greenwald just tweeted out some funny stuff. These are headlines from earlier this year. Sherrod Brown. Joe Biden will win Ohio, sparking an electoral college landslide across the United States. Here's another headline. Prepare for a Biden landslide. Another one. A Biden landslide? Some Democrats can't help but whispering. And then this is BuzzFeed. Most Democrats are scared to say so, but Joe Biden is poised for a landslide win. This is exactly... Oh my God, this is a snake eating its tail, because these are staffers and PR people and comms people getting on the phone to reporters and saying, well, you know what the real story is. The real story is there's going to be a landslide, but don't tell anybody I told you.
Yeah, they've become stenographers, largely of the state electoral campaigns. It's really horrible thing that we're in, this horrible, horrible condition of media coverage in this country. Of course, it's gotten so, particularly television media. We don't know who they are, I think is the way you put it, who's pulling the strings. Well, in a certain sense, we do. It's between news segments, you see advertisements. And in a certain sense, in a real sense, they are the ones pulling the strings. If they don't like news stories that keep coming up, they'll pull their advertising. So that pretty much controls what gets said and what doesn't get said.
And you can see that on, especially on Sunday morning shows, you know, because who's advertising on Sunday morning shows? It's all pharma and like national security, like McDonnell Douglas kind of stuff.
Right.
Arms manufacturers. It's the big money people and some tech interests, big money people, and they know how to keep their servants in line.
Oh yeah, yeah, it's very depressing. The more I think about and talk about the media landscape in this country, it's just. It's fallen so far from what it was years ago. I'm trying to figure out what I'm seeing from Nate Cohn on Greenwald's Twitter feed. You see that graphic?
Let's see.
It's two or three tweets down.
Let's see.
Greenwald tweeted it. I can't tell what state that is.
I see Nathan J. Robinson, but I don't see Nate Cohn.
Up from that. Just below the video of Greenwald petting a dog and talking to children.
Okay. Oh, I see it. We have some good news for Democrats in North Carolina, where a reporting error by Randolph County is padding Trump by about 30,000 in our estimate here. Oh, that's weird. Oh, that's really weird.
Yeah.
A reporting error of 30,000 votes? Huh.
Yeah, I'm sure it was a mistake.
I'm sure it was. Ooh. Biden still looks good in Arizona. That's very interesting.
Yeah. So hopefully these kinds of things will get straightened out. But who the hell knows?
So this graphic.
8 points with 73% in Arizona.
A net 30,000 votes for Biden, which isn't enough to get him the lead, but it helps a bit, they say. A similar case in Rockingham County, which is worth another 10,000 votes to Biden. And then in the other direction, the heavily Democratic Orange County may have a bug on our end. So there's just all kinds of funny business going on in North Carolina.
That's not surprising.
And okay. And so as you go down a little bit further, it says where the votes remain. And this is one of the data visualizations that I think is really helpful and useful, where you've got the bigger bubbles where there are more outstanding votes and the smaller bubbles where there are less. And then in North Carolina, you've got all these concentrations of big blue bubbles around the research triangle, the Raleigh, Durham area. and then down towards Mecklenburg, Charlotte. You've still got a lot of votes going down through Georgia. Lots in Atlanta is outstanding. And then when you come down to Florida, you've got a shit ton, it looks like, in Dade, West Palm Beach, Tampa. And I guess that's Osceola. Because that's the only blue in that part of the state, and it's too far south to be orange Orlando area. So there's still a lot of votes outstanding. Still a lot in Miami-Dade. Maybe Donna Shalala keeps her seat. That would be nice to not lose the House of Representatives. But, you know, things are in flux right now. And anytime I hear that 30,000 votes and 10,000 votes are disappearing here and there for no reason, it gives me flashbacks to 2004 and the funny business that happened in Ohio.
Right. Are you still on Greenwald's Twitter feed?
Mm-hmm.
Go down to a retweet of Matt Brunig.
Uh-huh. According to the exit poll, Trump did better in 2020. According to this exit poll, Trump did better in 2020 with every race and gender except for white men. Change from 2016. White men are down 5%. White women are up 2%. Black men are up 4%. Black women up 4%. Latino men up 3%. Latino women up 3%. And other up 5%. Probably Asian and Pacific Islander out west. So white men have fled somewhat from Trump, and he's gained a lot from African American and Latino. And I got to tell you, Democrats do not know how to message to the Latino community. Bernie Sanders had that shit down. Yeah, he had it dialed in, but for some reason,
he did. In 2020, he really did. Yeah, those numbers wouldn't be like that if Bernie were the nominee. There would also be even more turnout than there is now.
Oh, of course.
You know, the right would be going crazy if there was a socialist possibly entering the White House, and of course, there'd be a lot more people voting. Poor people who just, you know, they look at Biden and they look at Trump and they don't see anything for them, but they would have come out for Bernie. I mean, this was an analysis we did way back before COVID changed the whole dynamic, that the biggest coalition possible would have been under Bernie Sanders because of people's motivating to, you know, healthcare. I need healthcare. I'm going to go out and vote for this guy. Or $15 minimum wage, or, you know, whatever, free college, whatever poorer and poorly educated people need to do better and improve their lives, the type of things that Bernie Sanders was offering. And they would have come out for him. They didn't come out in the primaries. These are people who are not particularly engaged civilly, but they would have come out and voted in the general.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we need to grow up and stop with this whole thing that only centrists can win general elections, because we need to grow up and recognize that that doesn't have to do with strategy. That has nothing to do with what the party thinks is possible. As a matter of fact, what the party thinks is possible is that someone like Bernie Sanders would win. That's what they're afraid of. That's what they don't want to see, is those actual policies being implemented, because it would inconvenience their donors.
Well, not only that, if Bernie Sanders had won the nomination and won the election, he'd take over the party. He would displace the entire establishment. And there's no way they're going to let that happen.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. It was, they weren't afraid that Bernie would lose. They were afraid that Bernie would win.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know what? That's going to be what I talk about for the next day or so. You know what sucks tonight, though, is that I've had conversations for the last couple weeks with non-politicos, you know, people who are new voters, you know, who have been turned on by this election because not out of aspiration, but out of fear. And so, you know, they're like, we got to vote this cretin out of office. And they're terrified, absolutely terrified, you know, like there's been so much anxiety and tension around this race. And I feel like there are a lot of people tonight who are going to be crestfallen, and that tension and that anxiety is going to just keep, you know, going until we have an answer to what's going on here with the counts nationwide. Of course, it's not written in stone that Biden's going to lose this race, but I got to say, just in the last 20 some minutes, all of the numbers that I've come across have been accruing to the red column and not the blue column. So, you know,
I really feel
bad. You know, I feel bad because I feel like the Democratic Party could have put up a better candidate. The Democratic Party could do a better job of actually caring about people. And instead they give us these shit candidates and, you know, tell us to, you know, either support them enthusiastically or, you know, be excommunicated. And, you know, so everybody like gets in line like they're supposed to. And, you know, they're like, yay, whatever. Blah, blah. And they lose, you know, and we keep repeating this over and over again.
Right. Yeah. We had a chance to break out of that and really get someone high quality person in there. And the establishment just wanted nothing to do with that.
Nope. Can't have that.
No, can't have people's lives improved. Can't have minimum wage. It's amazing the extent to which, Democratic Party has become beholden to Wall Street money.
It is, isn't it?
It's sad. As Chris Hedges states over and over again, that we're basically, the state has been captured by large corporations, and that's why we don't have Medicare for All.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we don't have $15 an hour. We have what the corporations want us to have. This goes back to the study by, what were their names? Gillums and Page from 2014, studying what gets through Congress over 30 years.
Uh-huh.
They concluded basically that this is not a democratic order. It's not what the people want, but it's what special interests and corporate interests want. That they get what they want, but the American people do not.
And said another way, often the way that headline reads is that normal people, regular Joes like you and me, have absolutely zero impact on policy. Zero. None.
Right. Right. That's the other side of it. Politico is calling the House to be remain blue, even though the GOP is up by 30 seats right now.
Holy fuck. 30, oh my God.
30 seats.
That's a bloodbath.
I don't know how they're predicting a blue victory under these current numbers, but that's what they're calling. Senate is still a toss up. I wish I could see a breakdown of Ohio. Do you have a vote count there?
Yeah, I do. Let me bring it back up. Where'd you go? There it is.
Oh.
So Ohio at the moment is 53% for Donald Trump and 45.9% for Joe Biden.
Well, that's a big turnaround from when I came to theirs.
82% of the vote counted.
Yeah, it looks like Trump's taking Ohio.
Let's see if there's any flipped seats here. Nope, that's incumbent. Oh, Democrats are going to lose District 10, which was Desiree Timms. The Republican Mike Turner is going to win that. Marcy Kaptur keeps her seat. All these people keep their seats. And it looks like there's going to be another turnover in House District 1 in Ohio with Steve. Okay, wait. No. That's not going to be a turnover. The incumbent's a Republican. The challenger is a Democrat. And it doesn't look like she's going to catch up to him. Okay. But there is definitely a flipped seat here that's going to happen in District 10. So the Republican... No, that's not going to flip. That's 89. God, I'm so glad I don't have to do math for a living. Oh, my God.
42% in Trump is leading Pennsylvania by over 10 points, 12 points, 12 and a half points.
Oh, my God. This is so we're starting to see a narrative emerge here that that there was all of this media manufacturing consent that there was going to be a landslide for Biden, you know, like let's put out all of these stories about how there's going to be a landslide and this, that, and the other. And, you know, people buy the bullshit after a while and they start believing it. And instead of actually paying attention to what's going on the ground, it's all wish fulfillment.
Well, that, there's apparently shy Trump supporters, people who are lying to the pollsters.
That Trafalgar pollster, that was his thing. Oh, that reminds me. There's a DM group that I'm in where we've been talking about this guy for a while now. And, so he's going to be the next Nate Silver. He's the one, you know, called 2016 and is now calling 2020 when everyone else was wrong. So step aside, 538.
What's he calling for 2020?
Hmm?
Who's he calling for 2020?
Oh, he was the one who said that that Trump has shy supporters that aren't... you know, they don't report themselves on the polling. But I think also to another part of the equation is that pollsters contact likely voters. So they only contact people who are already in the voter rolls and have already demonstrated that they vote over and over again for a candidate. And I understand the utility of that. I mean, it kind of makes sense because you can always count on those votes, but then you get sideswiped when new voters come into the mix. And this is what happened in Florida in 2018 with Bill Nelson, with the thrumming that Bill Nelson and Andrew Gillum got. You know, the messaging before the election was, oh, Nelson and Gillum got this in the bag. All the polling was like, it's going to be at least a 3 or 4 point spread, blah, blah, blah. It comes down to election day. And for some reason, those voters don't show up. And then everybody is saying, oh, the polling was bad.
Right.
You know, silly us. the polling was bad.
Right now, Trump is up in Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Michigan.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. That's all three. That's all he needs. Especially if he takes Ohio. Then Ohio moved in his direction in the last hour by 8 points, 7.5 points now.
Well, we're just going to have a this is just going to be a mess. This is going to be a mess for people on the. Okay, let me unpack this a little bit. It's going to be a mess for the broader left, and by that I mean, you know, Democrats, liberals, and further across the spectrum. I think that the people on the left, the solid left, saw this coming and have been trying to warn people now for years, ever since 2016, and nobody will listen. And then I think my heart really aches tonight for people who are new voters and less than OCD politicos, you know, like I consider myself to be an OCD politico. And you know, really wanting to see and really feel like emotionally they needed to see Trump lose and Biden win, or really just Trump lose. And I feel like there's just going to be a lot of people who are crestfallen and heartbroken. And that kind of makes me sad, you know, and I also worry about, you know, we do have all of this culture war stuff that's going on and the bad shit around COVID and all the bad policies around Trump. So, I mean, you know, it's, we got to be able to separate the concrete policy and the political strategy that we want to do going forward. And we got to bring those two things together somehow. And goddamn, I don't know how to do it. I know that there's some really good people out there who need to be elevated. One is Anna Eskamani, who is a House representative in Florida at the state level. I think she's District 47. So she's an amazing, real progressive from Central Florida. She's on Facebook right now saying that you know, people got to get their shit together. She says, I'm saying it now. We need a whole new direction in the Florida Democratic Party. We are losing too many incredible down ballot elected officials and candidates right now, and it's not okay. I know we have the potential to be better and do better. We do it every day here in HD 47. And then some of the comments under that are the Florida Democratic Party is a consistent disappointment. And, you know, like, let's see, let's pony up and actually see state committee men and state committee women getting to work and so on and so forth. But, you know, this is terrible. This is absolutely terrible. Well, listen, Victor, I want to thank you for calling in, and I want to let you go so that we can get back to being anxious and watching these returns. I gotta check in on some things here, and I really appreciate you calling in and sharing your thoughts with us tonight.
Well, I appreciate you letting me. I was hoping to share this with somebody, and it's been a pleasure.
Yes, as always. And let's tag back up in like a week or so and after the fallout of all of this and reconnoiter, do it again.
Sure. Sounds good.
Okay. Sounds good.
Take care.
All right. Thank you, Victor. Everybody, that was Victor Tiffany, Bernie or Bust, author, frequent guest, good guy. Follow him on Twitter, and I will find his handle here in a second.
At Bernie or Bust.
Oh, there you are. You're at Bernie or Bust still?
Well, yeah.
Okay.
For now.
Okay. At Bernie or Bust. There you go. All right, guys. So I'm going to see you guys all on Sunday. And I'm going to go and refresh my results here, my returns. I'm going to refresh them compulsively through the night and not get any sleep and be an absolute wreck for the rest of the week, as I'm sure everybody else is too. So, you know, everybody, I guess, like, self-care is in order. I don't know what else to say. This is not looking good, except for this is not looking good. And it does seem from the 30,000 foot level that there is possibly some funny business in North Carolina. At the very least, there could be funny business in Pennsylvania. And, you know, funny business doesn't always happen on the Republican side. Sometimes there is funny business that comes from the Democratic side. Only I don't know if we're competent enough to pull it off at this point, which is not cool. I mean, shoot, you know, if you're going to play dirty, you might as well, you know, freaking be good enough at it to win a race or two every now and then. You know, here's to lessons learned, eh? I don't know what I can say or what I can do to make any of this better. I'm sure that there's not a goddamn thing. And you know, we're just going to have to carry on, you know, keep the stiff upper lip. So, let's do that. Let's just carry on. And we'll see you again on Sunday. Don't forget, on Thursday is Thursday at 8 o'clock. Janine Maloff with the Environmental Justice Report every Thursday at 8 o'clock. So tune in for that or check out your podcaster. And I will see you guys again on Sunday. Thank you.